evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Hoopers Podcast. I am your host, the president of the Hoopers, the headband warrior, Ben Roberts. And my guest today, a man who goes by many names, probably. Ben, definitely.
Yep.
Benny sometimes, we think.
I haven't had Benny before. It feels too jovial. It seems it gives this sort of sense of a guy's too fun for who I am, so I don't normally go for Benny.
There is that, maybe. Yeah, I feel a little bit emasculated maybe when people call me Benny.
Mm-hmm.
But it can help, Mike, because I feel like I'm quite a dour personality. I'm quite kind of straight-faced, always resting big face. So I feel like people calling me Benny maybe helps people see that, oh, he's actually called Benny, so maybe he's not a miserable...
Oh, I remember there was a girl at uni who called me Benny a lot, and I remember it really put me off pursuing her because she called me Benny so much, and she did it in a sort of really long whiny way, I seem to remember.
Like a Benny!
Benny! That kind of... And I was like, that's really funny.
Well, I bet she feels foolish now. Missed your chance, love.
Yeah.
It's Bennett Kavanagh. Do we have a middle name?
Arthur.
Okay, let me write that in. Arthur. Now, the folks at home may have been expecting me to say Benjamin Kavanagh, and instead they heard Bennett.
Yeah, I was. It's not a usual form of a, like, which Ben are you? Do you have a Ben, full Ben?
I'm a Benjamin, of course. Yeah,
Benjamin. Right.
Because I didn't know that Bennett was a. I wouldn't have thought that it would be. I would have thought it would be a name in America. Is the kind of thing you would think of as like a high school quarterback.
It is
white
quite,
guy.
Yeah, it's there's an SNL guy called. No, again, that's a surname. There's a guy called Beck Bennett, and that's a very macho American name. But it basically came from my mum really liking Pride and Prejudice. And, you know, with the Bennett sisters in that.
Yes.
She just thought it'll work well as a first name. And then it's not spelt the same as in Pride and Prejudice, so...
I don't think it's too bad. I mean, yeah. I've heard worse first names. Did you like it? Did you like it in school? What did other people think of it in school?
Well, I was never Bennett at school. I've started doing it more as like a stage thing.
Right, so this is a stage name, Bennett.
Yeah, but it's not the name I normally go by, but it's kind of a name that sort of makes me feel like I should be sort of performing a bit more, if that makes
sense. It's different.
It's different.
And I think on stage, you just pick anything to stand out. Like, as soon as Bennett's a comedian, by the way, just to add the context, I think probably comedians... The first thing they think of when they go out on stage is like, what can I say that'll make me either make the audience remember me or say something that's immediately like, I'm this person and this is why you should pay attention. And I guess a different name is a small way of doing that.
It is, yeah, it's about trying to, you know, most comics, you can kind of sum them up in a couple of adjectives, or you can, the reason they're good is because they have that personality or that voice. And the quicker you can get that across on stage, kind of the more confidence people will have in you.
And what personality do you have on stage? Oh,
I really don't know. That's the thing.
You've got the music, right?
Yeah. So I've got
a musical. I'm writing down because I'm thinking that this podcast will be like the springboard for your career of like how we get it into the mainstream. So I'm writing down
what
your
I'm expecting from today.
What we're offering. Oh, trust me, the road to Mock the Week goes through the Hoopers podcast. So you're musical. You're like a Bo Burnham kind of. You do songs in the middle of your set kind of thing.
Yeah, it's. I've tried to work it out because basically I used to do sort of longer songs, but I'm starting to feel that more in the context of like a short comedy set or just a comedy set in general. There's a lot of... You kind of have to switch your mentality quite a bit. And there's always... Maybe it's just my insecurity about it, but I feel when I start doing a song, people are like, oh, okay, we're in the song now. Let's wait for the song to finish and then we'll just clap at the end. And that's like 3 minutes of laughter, which is kind of lost.
So you're thinking about how to make your songs like a snappier, like a,
yeah,
you know, get to the punchline quicker or something like that.
Yeah, and like you say, yeah, Bo Burnham is someone who does that very well. And he, yeah, I think I've just seen a lot of musical comedy over the years, and I just don't want to be that.
Okay, so you're a musical comedian. You're also kind of like a family friendly. Is that right?
Yeah, I'd say that.
You're not out there talking about like gassing the Jews, and so you're already a step above your brother.
Oh yeah, he's the real anti-Semite of the family.
He's the gas the Jews comedian, and you're more the hug the Jews to close the show.
Yeah, that's my last Edinburgh title. Yeah, hug the Jews. I was just trying to remember who that guy's. What was it? Count Dankula? Is that his name?
Yeah, the one who trained his dog to do a Nazi salute.
Yeah, it's.
What do you think? I was going to ask you about that, actually, because I watched a BBC documentary about, like, because...
Yeah, I saw that. I knew some of the people who were in that, actually. Like, I've gigged with one or two of them.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, because they went to some comedy club where the thing was, like, say the most outrageous stuff you can think of.
Hmm.
And I was thinking, I wonder what Ben thinks of this. I wonder if he's ever been to something like this. I wonder if this is up his street.
Yeah. So that club, that's a backyard comedy club, I believe. And they have a night which is called Comedy Unleashed, which is the idea is like, guys, no holds barred. You can say anything that you want. And I've never played at backyard. It's not as like a principal thing, just like I haven't gotten
you
there.
You prefer comedy leashed.
I prefer strict boundaries that are adhered to constantly and...
Ankles
never,
covered at all times.
Absolutely. And covering the face as much as possible, you know, and just making sure everyone is comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Also supporting the Tories, a lot of that.
Do you? Is your stuff political in any way?
No, I used to have a song about Malaysian Airlines.
Okay. I think I'm going to write down apolitical in that case.
Yeah, what political stuff have I done?
Because I'm thinking, because I've written down here, I'm trying to get a straight line from Hooper's podcast to Mock the Week at the bottom. And
you're getting straight to whoever it is, Avalon, open mic? You're going straight to them after this and giving them the call?
Well, I'm thinking, but if Mock the Week are going to book you, they're going to need to see some political stuff, you'd imagine. Or maybe not, I don't know, you would know better than I do what they're looking for.
Well, I think my ambition would be to take, you know, like the Milton Jones chair, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So it's Milton Jones on Mock the Week. It's also the, on 8 out of 10 cats, it's kind of the bearded comedian one, just on the very end, which is like Joe Wilkinson, David O'Doherty.
So you want to add a bit of irreverence, a bit of levity.
I think that'd be, at the moment, I think that would be my preferred seat to go on.
Okay, irreverence.
Yeah, I wouldn't be that good at the Nish Kumar side of it.
That's a word, isn't it? Irreverence.
Irreverent, yeah. Levity. So is being reverent?
Irreverent.
Oh, I guess that's where reverend comes from, isn't it? I guess.
I don't know. I was just trying to sound clever, to be honest. You've exposed a huge flaw in my map of getting to Mock the Week. Only half of these are probably words.
What it means. That is famously how you get onto Mock the Week. You just use
but BBC
as many
do
big
seem,
words.
Yeah, BBC do seem to like the political stuff, don't they?
They do, yeah. Particularly MASH Report and all that jazz.
Yeah. Know. Yeah. And The Last Leg's not on BBC, is it?
That's a Channel 4 one.
That's Channel 4. But those are the shows that people seem to watch in terms of comedy these days. People want like jokes about Dominic Cummings.
Yeah.
Do you have any jokes about Dominic Cummings? Do you want to tell the folks?
I had I did a post on Instagram that didn't do that well recently about basically changing one of the government adverts to say, guys, we're being really critical of Dominic Cummings, but this was the actual advice
that
was given.
I saw that. Yeah, that was very funny. That was good.
I thought it was. I expected you a lot certainly, more from it.
You certainly earned my heart shape at the bottom of it.
Brilliant.
I have
well,
a joke.
I had...
Oh, go on.
Oh, no, I was basically saying I had one comment where I thought that Dominic Cummings is what it would look like if the moon were a... That was basically all I had.
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
Yeah.
So, but if you're a
gold,
I don't know what your political leanings are, but if you're a Tory supporter, it doesn't really matter, does it? Because I'm thinking that there's a gap in the market for like a Tory guy on the BBC.
Yeah, well, they already have Jeff Norcott. That's the guy who is. They always have that bit on the MASH report, which is kind of like the kind of staged discussion that Nish Kumar will have with him, and then it's kind of like a let's get the voice of conservative Britain, that's what they call him, and he's basically just like an Essex geezer who's sort of speaking common sense and having a go at woke culture and that kind of stuff.
Okay, but you don't want to be that guy, you want to be the bearded guy on the side.
I think I have to be as close to who I am as possible, and I you know, that's not
and
something
who you
I
are
have
is
interest.
a bearded man.
A sort of bearded man who is very irreverent and I'm using it now.
One of the least reverent. Yeah. Perfect.
I'm anti-reverent.
So what is the... So I'm thinking then that maybe Mock the Week shouldn't be the aim here. You know what I mean? We should be aiming for like a... for you to appear in films or something as like a cameo funny guy or like a sidekick.
So take the Zach Galifianakis route.
Yeah, something like that.
Because he used to do a bit of musical comedy as well, so that's kind of the same thing. Where it sort of did stand up for ages and then got his role in The Hangover as just
I know you have a musical background of sorts. You're very musically inclined. Do you have like a stage and theatre background?
Not a proper one. Basically, like drama at school. I did two musicals at uni.
Okay. And how did that go?
Well, I was basically sort of background chorus in both of them, so it was
okay.
I didn't really enjoy the experience, to be honest.
Maybe they just didn't give you your light to shine in your true comedic bearded man.
Oh no, they did, but I just didn't do it very well. They had so basically there was two. The first one we did was Evita, which
never
is where my
that.
Hatred of it's awful. It's really awful.
I know they had is that's what they have. Don't Cry for Me, Argentina.
Yes,
but that would be all I know about it. Don't even know
that's
what that's based on. Some Argentinian conflict.
It's based on. Ava Perón, that's her name, and the guy was he was some Argentinian dictator. Was it General Perón or something like that? And he was around in maybe the 40s, I think.
Okay,
but he was but basically
a lot
the
of dictators
thing,
yeah. in the 40s, weren't they?
Yeah, it was that was kind
it was
of
a hotbed of
yeah that was the real high point for fascism, wasn't it?
Well, until this week.
Hey, yeah. all the America are doing.
Yeah, I have a joke about current affairs for you to use.
I love the build up. Go on.
Yeah, I wrote this joke. I was gonna say I've written five jokes, but then I sat down to write them today. I was like, "F***ing hell, writing a joke is hard." Couldn't think of any.
Difficult. It's
yeah.
It's,
I don't know
yeah,
how,
when you're writing.
This will be my question after. How do you write jokes? But
okay.
First of all, let me tell you my... So this is current affair. This is what the people want these days, I think.
Yep.
Hey, business owners, if you don't want your shops looted, vandalized, and burned to the ground during a nationwide riot, maybe don't call yourselves Target.
That's good. I like it because it's not really a... It's not a... You could definitely use that because there's not a political thing. There's no political stance in it, so...
I guess it's against the man.
It's
whoever
basically
the owner of Target is.
It's basically the joke that I kind of like, which is a pun with a lot of clothing around it. That's what it
I
is.
Do like a lot of clothing.
I do also like to explain in way too much detail a joke that has just happened.
No,
it was a good joke.
No, definitely construct and deconstruct jokes. That's what we should be doing on the podcast, because we need to find out what the formula is for getting you as the next Zach Galifianakis. I'm thinking maybe I wrote that, but now I'm thinking maybe current affairs jokes aren't going to be the way. I suppose Zach Galifianakis. No, he's not current affairs, is he?
No, it's basically someone who when you think of them, you think of them in their own world. If that makes sense, it's someone who you can. They've somehow found a way of going around and always doing things according to their way. I think that, yeah, particularly with Joe Wilkinson, where he can say a certain word and you'll think, yeah, that's a Joe Wilkinson word, or that's the type of thing he would do. He would usually do something at a bus stop. I think that's the type of stuff he does.
And what is Bennett Kavanaugh's world? What does it look like?
It's, that's a tough
one. What have you been doing in the lockdown? What have you been busy with?
Well, very little.
So I'm
living with parents in Dulwich. And yeah, it's all quite calm around here. Nothing really changes that much. Mm-hmm. I've got a window out onto the field where I can see.
There you go,
a window into the world.
Into the world. And what are you seeing out of the window?
A lot of people breaking regulations, basically. There's a Saturn groups. They've opened. It's basically a school playing field, which they normally shut off most of the time. But for lockdown, they've opened it all up, and they're allowing people to sit there in groups. Yeah. So it's just become
Isn't that the opposite of a lockdown?
Yeah.
Why would they open it up in a lockdown?
I think the reasoning was because it's got a running track on it. They wanted to open it up for exercise.
Oh,
but basically, since it's happened, I've become one of those old cat ladies just staring out a window and then just noting the people who have been on lockdown.
But that's something. That's a character. I feel like that's you're approaching like who's like a cat lady comedian, like Roseanne or something.
Oh, Roseanne. I haven't seen much Roseanne actually.
Well, me neither. But I mean, I'm just thinking that she just looks like a cat old lady. Ladies. Yeah, she's a big old lady.
To be honest, the first one that came to mind for me was Sarah Millican, and that's not really accurate, I'd say.
Sarah Millican does a lot of like jokes where she's like with people. I'm imagining you doing jokes.
She's
as, like,
filthy
outside.
As well.
Yeah, there is that. Well, it's because she sounds funny when she says the terms for that kind of thing.
That was an atrocious Sarah Millican impression. I'm so sorry.
Oh, something. Your character isn't impressions, so it's okay.
Oh, damn it. Okay.
If your character is like, you know, a person who's like a loner, I'm thinking, because a beard will help with that, like doesn't talk about like interactions with people much, or if he does, it's like the pizza delivery guy and he like f**ks it all up or something.
Yeah, I think anything that is not the Russell Howard, any of the Russells, and any of their things, like, I'm your best friend. Oh, I went out with my mates at the weekend. Oh, we had such a laugh.
Yeah, we don't want mates.
We'll do that.
Comedy is not about mates.
Yeah, I don't go out.
Comedy is about the art of... Well, what
should
is
I be writing
I
this
know.
The art of... Come on, you're about to bust it
open. What are you... Why... This is why I've written some questions down for this podcast. You'll be interested to hear, which I never do for other podcasts. My first question
is... I'm honored. Thank you.
Why are you a comedian? Are you a people pleaser?
Ooh.
Or do you have contempt for the world and your audience?
If I have to pick one of those two...
Yeah. It's A or B, I'm afraid.
I guess when an audience is there as like a group that is, you know, communicating laughter to you, I don't treat them with contempt. It's when they're on their own that I treat them with contempt, really.
It's when you get them in a corner all alone.
Yeah, when they sort of come out at the end of the gig and say, like, oh, hey, this bit about this bit, oh, my friend does this or whatever, and you chat to them, oh, you're not a great person. You were better in the group. I much preferred the group to you as a person.
Yeah.
People play. Oh, it's tough. Haven't
are you? Do you think you're a comedian because you like people laughing with you? You like making people laugh, or you like kind of like the art of comedy?
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's I like making people laugh. I think in particular I like making people that I like laugh. So like making my family laugh, I really like. And I tend to like the stuff that my family laughs at. And then the kind of humour that... So me and my friends were big fans of The Day Today and like all the Chris Morris stuff.
Oh, yeah, Chris Morris.
It's like Brass Eye, that type of stuff. So I like that type of humour and that kind of...
So is it a case of like you'll go out and do your set, and if they like it, great. You're like, oh yeah, I've liked making people laugh in your kind of way. And if they don't like it, you're kind of like, oh well, they just don't get my brand of humour kind of thing. That would be the contempt.
Yeah. Well, I think I've felt that a lot more at the start. The kind of, you don't get what I'm doing. I'm just, I'm doing like Bill Hicks V2 and you don't understand. And I think that only makes you become a worse comedian if you keep on doing that. And so I've had to train myself not to do that as much.
You're training yourself to do things for the audience, are you?
Yeah, or at least, so yeah, I've tried not to do a gig. If you're blaming the audience should be the last thing that you blame if you do badly.
Right.
So you should go through, you know, think about if the material you did was good enough, whether you chose the right material, whether you missed out anything, whether you didn't deal with something in the room. And if all of that stuff is fine, then at that point you can blame the audience and go like, oh yeah, no, this is because Dover is a shithole.
Because I'm imagining that Chris Morris, if he was doing a... I don't know. Was he a stand-up comedian?
I don't know, actually.
Well, let's say he was, for the purposes of what I'm going to say, which might not make any sense if he wasn't.
No, but go for it.
Let's say that he was. He would probably, I'm imagining, not care if people didn't get his stuff. He would just be like, well, this is my niche and I'm doing it kind of thing. He wouldn't go out there thinking like, oh, well, this looks like an audience who's going to like knock-knock jokes and do a bunch of knock-knock jokes.
Yeah, he sort of unapologetically stuck to his brand.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's harder for comics who are sort of very distinctly them and they only do the thing that they do.
Mm.
They can start to really struggle if they go to the clubs or... there used to be a chain of clubs called Jonglers, which were known as being like a certain type of gig. It was like late night hen do's and stag do's. And
oh, right. So it was like the kind of audience that you don't really want.
Yeah, basically all they want to hear about is and tits, and that's that's it. And
I mean, they're not alone. A lot of people want to hear about and tits.
I think more people than you think want to hear about and tits.
Yeah, because
there are a lot of them out there.
I think a good representation of what people like and what people want is the internet, because it's like what people are searching in on Google, what people are doing, and they tell me that 80% of the internet is porn. So that tells me people are looking for porn a lot, like a lot more than they're looking for car insurance. That's what I heard. Yeah, 80 80% of websites are pornographic.
And maybe that's maybe we're not including the small minority who are looking for stuff like car insurance to get their kicks.
On porn sites.
Yeah, you never know. Wait, is it really 80%?
That's what I read on Twitter, and right. I don't think Twitter would lie to me.
No, Twitter is famously a beacon for truth.
Well, I don't know how many sites there are, but there seem to be a lot.
Yeah, I could see that being true. I think it's more like a shock that is the case than it's more a disbelief.
Mm.
That's crazy.
Did it make you want to add some stuff into your act?
What, more pornographic material?
Yeah, more just like some demonstrations.
I mean, anything that gets me onto Mock the Week, I think if they just ask for like, oh, what do you think of Boris Johnson? And I, here's my Johnson, and then I get my dick out, and then...
That's good. That's very good.
I'm pretty pleased with that. I just came up with that. And
yeah. You're going to do great on the... I don't know how the... Did the BBC like kind of pornographic jokes? I don't really have a good handle on what the BBC are at the moment.
No, I think at the minute, they're... I don't know, it's quite hard to know what they want, really. I think fundamentally they don't know what they want. But I guess if there is a trend, you'd say they're they're leaning more towards sort of minority representation and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the political stuff tends to be more left-wing, I would say.
And whatever the BBC editor says, you know that when he's getting home, he's Googling and so...
Maybe even at work. I imagine he's in the studio checking the sound stuff.
And, yeah. Every now and again, some photo goes red viral.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every now and again, some photo goes viral of some guy at work that's been caught watching porn at his desk.
Yeah. Well, I think there was a story of a guy doing that on a bus, in a bus depot. I think I heard about that recently.
What do you mean? On his phone?
Yeah, I think so. So he was a bus driver who'd just done his route, and the bus was parked in the depot, and he had maybe half an hour until he had to go out on the bus again. And so he just went up on the top deck and had a and then got caught doing it.
Yeah, because but surely he would know that there's a camera up there.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Or maybe when you turn off the bus, the camera turns off. I think someone saw him from outside.
On the top deck?
Wow. Yeah, I think so. This is from very vague sources from what I remember.
I was watching a documentary the other day. This is a wild delineation from what we were talking about.
No, I was watching a
documentary about so this guy is narrating what happens. He's saying he goes to visit his daughter. He's like an old guy. He says he goes to visit his daughter who's mentally handicapped. He hasn't heard from her for a few hours. So he lets himself in, opens the door, goes in the bedroom, and she's having sex with some guy. So he's embarrassed. He's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Closes the door, waits in the kitchen. And then she doesn't come out. He goes back in. She's dead. And it turns out she'd been dead for a day.
Wait, what was the time from him going in the first time and then coming out? Was it she died in that time?
Like an hour, I think. No. She was already dead.
Oh, wait. So some guy snuck in and had sex with her. Oh, that's grim.
Yeah.
Was it someone he knew?
Was it someone he knew?
Not like his friend from Bingo or something.
It was someone she knew, I think. They didn't catch him for years.
So
for,
did
decades, I think.
So she goes out to her bedroom, dies in her bedroom?
No, I believe he would have killed her in.
Oh, so he could have that makes more sense than what I was thinking in my mind. Yeah.
What were you thinking?
He
just happened upon a dead body in her.
Sense what I was thinking. I was thinking she went up, died in her bedroom, and then this guy turns up for some reason, has sex with the body, and then it makes a lot more sense that he came in and did the killing himself. Yeah. I don't know why I thought
so.
That.
It's justified in your opinion.
I'm not condemning it. I'm not condoning it. You know, in 2020, I think choice is the main thing.
I think there's some things in life you've got to stand up and say, that's not right. And I think murdering a young mentally disabled woman and then having sex with her corpse, I think is where I draw the line. Now, I'm not comfortable explaining exactly why I'm drawing the line there. You know, I'm sure there's some nuance edgelord on Twitter could say but what about this, and then you don't have a problem with eating meat, but I'm gonna have to say I'm not in favor of what that guy did, and I'm glad he was eventually caught through the DNA database.
Okay. It's a strong stance, I'll give you that. But I guess we'll agree to disagree on that, because
I like generally Jews and the Judaic faith.
Yeah, let's cut this off short. Actually, I'm not in favour of that. I was not brought onto this podcast thinking that we were going to be in favour of people's religions and their ethnicities. I was told explicitly we were going to be undermining them.
Well, I can edit it so that I'm saying exactly the opposite. I feel like people on podcasts, when they listen to podcasts,
yeah,
they do want to hear strong opinions about stuff. They want to, because when I listen to the ones that are popular, I'm always hearing like people who are, it's never people saying like, oh, I don't know, you know, could have gone either way. It's always people saying like, and this guy should be thrown in jail because he's, people gravitate towards certainty, I think.
Yeah, it's why I was worried about doing this, because I don't really have many opinions about things. Like, I'm very middle of the road about a lot, and... You know, it's why, yeah, I don't think I'll be... There's a guy at the minute who's, like, sort of kind of open spot level. He's on This Morning quite a lot. Because he's... Because he's a guy who basically didn't want to sign this contract. Sort of saying, don't do, like, racist, sexist, homophobic material or whatever. And he refused to sign this. Right. And then he got brought onto Good Morning Britain. And he's kind of seen as, like, the right-wing
That's
spokesman.
Where ITV pick you up.
Yeah, I don't...
Refuse racism? Come on board!
Come on. And then he had a nice little chat with Piers Morgan. And and now he's... Yeah, now he's doing quite well from that. But I don't really know how they picked up on it.
Is there any material you have that is, like, you could see being objectionable or, you know, it doesn't have to be racist, but, like, against some kind of particular person, stereotypical of some type of people? Anything like that?
Probably. I've tried to not write stuff like that recently. I'd say the most recent example, which is probably a set I haven't done in a while now, but I used to do... It's a set I still really like. I'd still perform. It was about... it's basically talking about heist music, and it's a musical comedy bit, so it's me talking about how heist music sounds like this. It's always like a funky bass line.
What's heist music?
So it's anything...
You mean like when so in like a film from, when someone's breaking into a bank?
Yeah, so like in Ocean's 11, the montage bit was like... And it's all like really cool. And basically my bit was just saying, isn't it weird how you could just do any crime and put funky bassline underneath it and it'll make it seem suave? Like, this is weird how it happens.
Suddenly you're the good guys of the film.
Yeah, so you have like, oh yeah, that was funky, indecent exposure or whatever, and then... And they say, yeah, we got some real funky terrorism going on here.
I bet they play that funky music in the... They played it in the concentration camps and all the Nazis were going, see, we are the good guys.
All right, this is the plan. First of all, we take them into the chambers. That is the plan. It is actually quite a simple plan.
No, it's not a laughing matter.
Actually, yeah, I was doing that to demonstrate how sickening that is. But basically, I'd say the controversial part of that bit was, it was basically me doing like a terrorist attack and then doing a funky bassline underneath it, going like, oh, okay. The guy with the backpack, the security guard was Ahmed all along. Oh, that's crazy.
Okay, so you said Ahmed, and that's the controversial bit.
I think so. I think it was the minute I brought Islam into it. It kind of brought attention which didn't need to be there. Anyway,
and did that come across in the crowd's reaction?
No, I think I played with it, and hopefully I wrote it sensitive, the right word? Yeah, I guess in a sort of sensitive enough way that, you know, you can get the fact that I'm not a full on racist.
Bit you built racist, Ahmed bit up racist. Before you tore him down.
No, I was actually quite glib about mentioning Ahmed. I just brought him into it and said, yeah, it was Ahmed. I'm trying to remember what I do. I followed up with a Julia Roberts line afterwards, which kind of make people forget about it. I think
that was her purpose in the 90s.
Yeah,
forget about terrorism. Here's Julia Roberts.
And the fact she wasn't there on 9/11, I think, is the worst crime of that day.
Was she not?
Well, you tell me. Did you see her? Did you see her around?
I don't remember seeing her around, actually,
Did she turn up on a single news channel to say anything about 9/11?
Do you think she's happy? Not because of 9/11, I mean just in with life in general.
It happens like, oh, this is like birthday and Christmas all at once. This is all I wanted.
That's why she wasn't on the news channel.
Can't think of anything nice to say, don't say it at all.
Do you think she's... Because I'm imagining she's not married... Don't know if I'm
I don't.
Right there.
No, has she got anything to do with Scientology? I feel she'd be in the Scientology crowd.
Yeah, she has that kind of vibe about her, right?
Yeah.
I believe she has two sons. So maybe she is married.
She had, I think she has a daughter, because I saw Ocean's 12 recently, and she plays, it's a very stupid film, and there's part of a heist where she plays herself as, what is it? Yeah, she's playing her character who's disguising herself as Julia Roberts, who then talks to Bruce Willis, who then talks about how's your daughter, so-and-so. So I think she has a daughter.
That's very meta.
It's arguably the best and worst part of that film. It's,
you said Ocean's 12?
Yeah, I think it's Ocean's 12, yeah.
I've never seen it. I've never seen Ocean's 11.
Have you not? It's good.
But I do like Julia Roberts in the two films I've seen her in. Maybe just one.
Yeah, what have you seen her in?
What was the one with Hugh Grant?
Notting Hill.
Notting Hill, seen that. Thought she was very charming in that.
Yeah, she was good in that.
Have I seen her in anything else? Probably not.
I've been meaning to see Pretty Women. Pretty Women? Pretty Woman. Apparently that's quite good.
Have I seen Pretty Woman? Oh, about the prostitute, right?
Hmm.
Yeah. I believe I have seen that.
I think she got an Oscar for that. I'm not sure.
And I've got some good news for the folks at home. She seems to be married.
Really?
To a Daniel Moder.
Oh.
But he's not famous, so maybe she's a bit less happy than...
Can I try and guess his age?
Okay. So she is 52. How old is
she? 52.
She's 52.
I think...
And Daniel Moder is...
I'm going to say younger, and I'm going to say, you know, with it being A-list Hollywood, I'm going to say quite a bit younger. So was it 52? I'm going to say 40.
He's 51.
Oh,
so maybe they have a completely normal relationship.
Fuck off. Well,
it says here, Julia Roberts and husband Daniel Moder make rare public appearance. So they don't get out much.
What was her last film?
Her last film. Yeah. Let's see.
Because I remember she did a film about... She was a police officer and her son got killed and she was really angry about that.
Is that Erin Brockovich?
I don't think so. Unless Erin Brockovich has changed.
What was Erin Brockovich again? That was some murder thing, wasn't it?
Maybe it is. I think, for some reason, I'm thinking of Anna Karenina. And then I'm thinking it's that type of film. Is that a film?
Her last film...
Oh, I don't know.
Her last film was Ben is Back.
Oh.
I think.
That is a remarkable coincidence.
I've never heard of any of these films. But look, good luck to her is what I'm saying. I think she has a charm about her. Yeah. I think there's some actresses like that where you kind of think like, you know, how did they get their celebrity and what's so great about them? And then I see them in interviews and stuff and I'm immediately like, oh yeah, because I've seen more Julia Roberts interviews than I have Julia Roberts films, so I'm going off that.
Okay.
And
I think I'm about the same, probably.
I hear her I think, here is a charming, lovable, middle America girl next door type of lady that you want to put in a film. I think the same about Drew Barrymore. I hear Drew Barrymore, I'm like, I completely understand why you would want to put this person in a film. Like, usually when I see interviews with actors, they're just like some posh guy, and it's like, oh, so you graduated from the Theatre of Art School. Great. It's like, what is good about this guy other than he's attractive?
Yeah, all the Eddie Redmaynes and Benedict Cumberbatch, he just went through the system and...
Ugh, and hate them.
I guess it's weird, like, Hollywood is... Maybe it's happening more at the minute, but it seems... Yeah, they're looking more... Well, they're looking less for that kind of... beautiful actress, the one we're all aspiring to be, and it's kind of changing a bit to was it Girl Next Door? Is that how you describe it?
Of where they're changing to?
Well, yeah, maybe the mentality is kind of we want to find someone more normal,
some skank.
Oh, I was just about to say Melissa McCarthy, but that doesn't seem like a good segue because she's
on.
But as in, I was going to say like the Melissa McCarthy is in like you know the idea of someone who's not conventionally beautiful, becoming like a sort of Hollywood A-lister because
not
they can play those
at
rules.
All, in fact.
No, Boyd.
No, I'm just.
I mean, fair, but Boyd.
No, that's not. I barely know who she is, so I don't want to disparage her. No, yeah, that's fair. I think these days as well, it's easier to. I feel like it's easier for someone to make it without that kind of avenue of like a guy spots you and he's like, I want to put you in a film. Now it's more like you can make yourself famous and you can write your own thing and you can appear on your own web series, and then suddenly you're just in Hollywood and you didn't, you know, follow the system. You didn't have to sleep with what's his name to get there.
Yeah, and some of the best stuff and some of the longer lasting stuff didn't go through that mold. So do you watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, that basically came out of nowhere when it was just guys who were sort of, you know, still working in restaurants and doing the occasional acting, just like, ah, fuck it, let's just film our own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they filmed it in sort of basically the same style that it is now, where they were just improvising in an apartment or at a bar.
So maybe that's what me and you need to do. We'll write something where I'm the straight man and you're the...
I see every two or three lines go, yeah, that'll be the case. Or like something that makes the ladies love me.
Yeah. Well, no, I feel like the ladies would love... The ladies love the straight man and you're more like the... I'm the one who gets the girl and then you get the girl at the end of the season. Like, that's what we build towards.
Okay.
Where there's like a girl who lives next door and she's like... She's attractive, but she's like attainable, and you two have a little flirt.
Sorry, fine. Oh, I think my mom.
That's a loud thing. Mom's. What is that?
It's just the house phone, but we have we have one at the top of the house and one at the bottom, but it's basically my mum's office phone.
So that's the noise that your phone makes when it rings.
Yeah, it starts talking and it starts saying what the number is, and then it will just
2020, man.
What is your phone?
Crazy. Dude? It goes. I think it goes ring 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 ring.
That's so last century.
I noticed the other day that my house phone, only rings four times. So I need to edit it because conventionally, you'd expect to hit the answer machine at around 7 or 8 rings. And if people are hitting it at 4, that's telling people that we're off limits as a household in a way that I'd feel don't want to be putting out there, that we're that antisocial and secluded. You know, we want friends to think that they can ring us.
Yeah, what number of rings? What's your ideal number of rings that you would pick up at?
I think conventional is 8. I would like 7. Because when I ring people, when I pick up at,
yeah, if the phone goes off right now next to you, if there's a point that you want to wait, do the rings go the same at both end? So the it would be, that you hear when you're calling, does that match up precisely to the ringtone at the other end?
I think it would, but there's a lag, right? That's what I'd imagine.
Yeah, okay.
Like it's the same speed.
Because I'm thinking I like someone to, when I'm calling, I like someone to answer the phone at about maybe 3, 3.5.
Oh, that's quick.
Yeah, I just like to be in the call and I like to get the business done.
No, see, that's not me. That's not me at all.
Okay.
I'm more like a 5 kind of guy.
5.
5, I'd say.
That's saying you've,
4, 5,
you're doing
6.
Stuff. You've got stuff on.
Yeah. And also, when I ring someone, it takes me a minute to collect myself and be like, okay, I'm going to lead with a hello or a hi, or I'm going to, you know,
howdy.
Lock them down with a what you've been up to or whatever. I need that extra couple seconds to prepare.
You need a thing.
Yeah.
So I tend to, I do this quite a lot of when a phone is ringing, and I'll sort of maybe hold off until the middle of the next ring to pick up. Just because I like to be in the middle of it. I don't know why. So I don't want to be at the end of a ring or sort of just before another one's starting.
This is when you're picking up, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I always pick... I pick up at... This will be riveting podcast. I pick up at ring, 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 pick up. Like halfway through the fifth one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems quite...
Anyway...
A bit. How about doorbells?
It takes me a while to get to the doorbell.
Doorbell, you can forgive a bit more because there's
Doorbells are just so unexpected. I'm never like on my way to the door. And it's always like when the door goes, I'm always like, what the fuck? Someone's at the door. And it's always the postman. I don't know why I'm surprised. It's always like around 10 a.m. And I'm always like, what?
Yeah. I think because, you know, where I'm staying, it's in quite a nice neighborhood. So we do get a lot of the, there's a name for them, but you know, the charity door people.
Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah, but for donkeys, basically. Oh. Those guys.
What, the RSPCA?
Yeah, I was like, you know, the people who you answer that, hi, how are you? How's it going? To and immediately I'm like, I want to tell you to f*** off, but you're going to have a go at me. And
those people are really good in London. They're really good at like being engaging and trapping you in a way where you're like, well, I can't shut the door on this person now because they're just too bloody lovely.
It's the Bible salesman who I think are the absolute best at that, because that's the hardest gig to do, I think, for those salesmen.
Yeah, although you are selling eternal, you know, whatever they're selling.
The good word.
What's the opposite of damnation?
Salvation, isn't it?
You're offering...
Exaltation? No.
I'll write it down, but I don't know what it means.
I think salvation.
You're selling salvation, so it must be somewhat easier for them because they like really believe in what they're knocking on every door thinking like, if I don't convert this guy, he's going to hell.
Yeah, and I guess you have to go down that emotional route, don't you? Because you can't do the, because like a cleaning salesman will go down the sort of practical thing of like, hey, don't you hate shit on the walls? And it's like, oh yeah, I hate that. Well, I've got a brush.
I do.
It's like, oh, okay, great. Have a brush. You can't really do the same with the Bible because the Bible only has one use, and that's saving our souls.
Yeah, that's true. But it is a good centerpiece for a room. Like if the Bible's on like a side table or something, you're immediately like, okay, that's like it's the same as like having a lamp or something.
I would love a Bible lamp. Somebody who just got a Bible, put a bulb in the middle of it. Oh, you could do it so that it's there on the table and it turns
and then
on
when
you
open
it. Oh,
that would be great. And maybe does like a little sound. That would be great.
Different lights to different pages as well. I mean, you'd need a big Bible for that.
It's getting more complicated than my Dragon's Den pitch is going to be able to answer all these questions.
Yeah, what's your turnover for first year of Bible light bulb company?
I always feel so sorry for them when the dragons ask like, "What's the turnover?" I'm like, "Gee, come on!" Like they're asking you for money. Then how are they supposed to? If they already had a booming business, they wouldn't be on Dragon's Den.
Well, I think they get more pissed off when people don't know the numbers. I think if the numbers are shit, they talk a bit about why that is and. Unless there's some kind of glaring thing of their sort of selling something for not enough. Unless there's something like that, they'll just be like, oh, you're a bit shit, but I admire your guts as an entrepreneur, or whatever they say.
Yeah. That's what you really go in there for. Peter's respect.
Yeah. Oh, we were watching it the other day and just appreciating how much of a shit he has become. Because he is basically, I would argue, he's got the status as the best dragon. And the one that people want to get.
In what sense?
Well, I guess if you're going in for a pitch and you're thinking, what's the ideal scenario? You know, sure.
You want him.
Yeah, because I'm not sure what I think his portfolio is quite big.
Okay.
He's got a lot of experience. But basically, he knows that and now he just keeps on swooping in with an offer at the last minute after Devin Meaden has gone like, I'm so excited about this business. I have a dog myself who died last year, and this kind of thing would stop this kind of thing from happening. Then Peter Jones,
these kind of microwaves are really going to help. My dead dog.
I've had that dead dog on the floor for ages, not knowing how to eat it, and now dog microwaves are here. I'm so so thrilled that you've brought this into my life.
Mm.
And Peter Jones will say, "I'm going to kill your dog."
I look at Deborah Meaden and I think, how is this a successful person in this world with this kind of attitude?
Yeah, what is her business? Why is she successful?
No idea. I would guess cosmetics or something like that.
Yeah. Is that because she's a lady?
She's a lady, yeah.
Because I know... Because Peter Jones, I think, is... No, Duncan Bannatyne is Spars. Peter Jones... I want to say furniture. I don't know. Property? I don't know.
Property, you'd imagine.
That makes more sense.
That makes money, doesn't it? Because property is worth a lot of money.
Hmm. Yeah, I would say property for that. Because I think those two are the only ones that have stayed there from the beginning.
Yeah.
And all the other ones have come and gone. And now I don't know who they are anymore.
I have some more questions about your comedy career.
Yep.
You ready? I went to the effort to writing these down, so I feel under pressure to say them now.
No, that's fine. Hit me.
Do you feel under pressure to be funny in social situations?
I think I used to before I did comedy.
Oh, okay.
And I think that was because I wanted to do comedy and I hadn't yet made that leap into doing live comedy. So I think I'm a lot better than I was.
When did you decide you wanted to do comedy?
Well, I remember knowing before uni that I wanted to try it at uni.
That's fairly young.
Yeah, I'm not sure what point along the way I wanted to do it. I remember writing sort of funny plays for like house drama competitions. Mm. Liking sketches and that type of thing, and
like in the Fry and Laurie kind of mold of how they got started.
Yeah,
except didn't have a friend.
No, I mean it was Mitchell and Webb was the big thing, and I still watch them. That's what inspired you. I think so. No, it must have been Tim Minchin, maybe. That must have pushed me into like the live performance side of it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there was a kind of jealousy of sort of seeing how bloody good he was at piano. And then,
so you're wait, what is your, remind me of your musical background again? You're a piano guy.
Yeah, so I've got a grade 8 piano.
Ooh, and that is the top one.
it's the top one before you go to the next stage is diploma. And that's gets a bit more serious from that point.
Hmm.
But I basically got to the point where I can pick up most sheet music and sort of read it and play it. So
grade eight, you can pretty much play everything, right? All the songs, except for the ones that are like trying to be difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it would still take a while to learn Flight of the Bumblebee or something like that.
I feel like sometimes Mozart must have sat down at his piano and thought, I'm just going to make this fucking hard as fuck. I'm just going to jump around.
Yeah, I'm going to... Chopin did that a lot, apparently. He was a proper nerd in that he would just like, oh, yeah, the technical ability on this is going to be fucking A. And just gonna...
Chopin is my favorite for like a dark mood, for like a sad... Whenever someone breaks up with me, I listen to Chopin.
Really?
So every week, I'm popping him on.
Oh. It's really good for studying, apparently. There's loads of mixes of sort of like Chopin for studying. But I think it's Ballad Number 1 in G minor. That's considered one of the saddest pieces of all time, I think.
Well, good. I'll have to give that a try.
Just a heads up for the next breakout there.
Definitely. So I'm imagining. So I guess when you say that you're like a piano nerd, you didn't say nerd, but I just added that in there.
No, I'll take it. Thanks.
So when you say you're a piano nerd, I think people kind of think like, oh, so that's why you turn to comedy to be like because I feel like comedy is seen as like the same way magicians are seen as like the revenge of the nerd, the nerd's time to
have
a crowd gather around them and stuff.
Yeah, well, comedy in particular is a big one for... Well, a lot of the big comics say they first started doing comedy to stop the bullies from bullying them. And then they did that more and more and they realised the power of laughter and then they just kept doing that and then...
And then they became bullies themselves.
Hmm. I think. But it's not... Yeah, I'm personally, that's not what happened to me.
No, you were fucking popular as f***.
Oh, Big Jock.
Yeah.
Straight
with a name like Bennett, I don't think so.
Straight into A-team for rugby. I would just walk on, I'd kick the ref, steal the trophy, and I'd just do a big in the theatre.
So you're not working through any kind of psychological demons, is what you're saying?
No, or at least I thought I did at the start, and then I thought I was sort of really torn up, but then the more comedians you meet, and the amount of mental health that you see going on in the circuit, you realise, I'm fine. I'm actually fine. There are no problems here.
You must see some horrendous comedians, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I watch my own sets. They're not.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm actually pretty good.
I think you're very funny, and I...
Oh, thanks.
That's coming from someone who does not like comedy, really. I'm not much for jokes, in that especially stand-up comedy makes me quite uncomfortable. But I watched your stuff live once, and I've watched some clips on YouTube and stuff, and I think you're very funny. I think you could go very far in this biz.
I was trying to remember what, because you did come to a live gig. I was trying to remember which one.
I came to one, but it was one, you didn't do a set, you were just hosting, so you just talked in between everyone else's sets.
Oh, the East Dulwich night.
Yeah, I think it was East Dulwich. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God.
Are there some that aren't in pubs?
some actual gigs are not in pubs, yeah. But
like festival gigs?
Well, even just like proper comedy clubs and that type of thing.
Oh, yeah. Are there a lot of comedy clubs in London?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch. From my experience of it, you got the big ones. You got Comedy Store, Top Secret, 99 Club is one of them. You got a whole bunch of them.
I always hear Joe Rogan. He's always talking about the Comedy Store. He's like, oh yeah, you just pop down to the Comedy Store, and apparently that's where all the big comedians played in the 70s and 80s, and that's apparently how you get famous. You play at the Comedy Store.
Yeah, I think that's in LA, that one.
Yeah,
I'm not sure, but yeah, that was yeah. There's a kind of, well, I guess both comedy stores have that kind of mystic quality to them. When you go in, you know,
Do you have ones that you're like aiming for? You're like, oh, if I could get a gig there, then I'm gonna be making it, baby.
I think I had that with the Comedy Store. In that, so the first gig I did at the Comedy Store was the Gong Show, and that was the first time I was in there. And
that's where you do a set until they play a gong. Is that right?
Yes. So if you beat 5 minutes without being gonged off, you go through to a bit at the end where you do another minute, and then out of that, they decide who has won the night.
A winner.
Yeah.
Did you beat the gong?
Yeah, I beat the gong and won the thing at the end.
Hey, that's good.
And that's how I got my first 5 minute spot there. And then I did a few of those, and then I've come back for tens. And so I think I've done it maybe 7 times now. I've performed there. And
okay, so you're making it. You're like a celebrity on this London circuit.
That's how I sell it. Definitely. I've at the highest number of minutes of unpaid spots that I can do, because the next stage is doing like a 20-minute opening spot at some point in the midweek. If you do well there, then maybe you give you a spot at the weekend. Then maybe they'll give you like a residency at the weekend, where you do the 2 shows Friday and Saturday with a whole bunch of other people doing like 20 minutes on each of those nights.
Okay.
Then once you're doing that regularly, you become like a headline. By that point, you're just considered brilliant, and you'll be able to get on anywhere. And you're probably looking at like TV.
So you're just kind of slowly making your way up the... You're just getting your name out there. You're chipping away at these fives, the tens.
Yeah. I'm right at the bottom of the ladder. And it's,
oh, no, it doesn't sound like you're at the bottom. I've seen the bottom.
I've seen so funny.
Real
now.
Bad comedians.
God, I find it funny. Watching a comedian die on his ass.
You might. Do you see it where it's like a hostile bombing?
I find it all depends on the circumstances, but I find it when it's completely fallen apart, I find that quite funny. So I remember seeing there was a gig at a pub called The Gunners, which is, as you'd expect, like a big Arsenal pub in Highbury.
There was
an open micer who went there to do a set. Who was one of those newbies who come in, who's basically like the funniest guy in the office he works in at the estate agents or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be like a big macho guy. He's like, oh, you know what? I'm going to do some comedy because I'm the f***ing mm-hmm. And he thought it would be funny to do a set at the Gunners pub talking about how shit Arsenal were.
Mm-hmm.
Which you really have to be a good comic if you're even going to start doing a set like that. But the thing is, he started doing that, doing shit jokes about how shit Arsenal were. And then when the lady behind the bar started going, you what? He got nervous and started saying, sorry, could you not speak when the acts are on? Ooh. And then went back into his material about how shit Arsenal were. And at the end of every joke, she would shout something about how much of a idiot he was. And every time he would say, oh, sorry, can you respect the comedians?
Oh, no.
And no one was laughing except for me at the back of the room, just in hysterics about how awful that situation was. And how he brought it on himself.
I feel so sorry for when I see... I remember it used to be really popular viral videos back in the early days of YouTube where it'd be like, comedian yeah. bombs and gets booed off stage.
Yeah.
And I used to watch him like, oh my God, this poor guy. It's probably his birthday or something. He's like trying to be accepted by this group. And everyone's yeah. telling him how shit he is.
Have you seen...
Horrible.
There's one... Richard Pryor's son does stand-up. Or he started doing stand-up. Oh. I don't know where he is now. But the only video of him that is online is one entitled Richard Pryor's son gets booed off at the Apollo.
Oh.
And to be honest, when I watch videos like that, when they get booed off, depending on the circumstances of the gig, it's usually because they are shit.
Right.
And you can look at that and think, okay, you're doing that wrong, you're doing that wrong. At this point...
You're breaking these jokes down, are you? You're saying, you should have put the punchline at the end, you should have counted the syllables out.
Yeah, pretty much. You can watch it and say... Well, even just watching it as a regular viewer, you can watch it and think, okay, you've been on stage for 20 seconds and nothing has happened. No wonder mm-hmm. people are getting impatient. Like, you finished your thought and that didn't end in a laugh.
Didn't land it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you know, I should say, having been through that experience hundreds of times myself, of just dying on my ass and getting nothing from response, I understand what's going through your mind, and that's why I'm kind of numb to it, and I don't really feel that much of an emotional attachment to it.
No, maybe not. I mean, it's not the end of the world. I guess the comedian will just do a set the next day, and people will laugh at his jokes.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll just, you get better.
He'll learn from... Richard Pryor's son will learn from it.
Although he was shit.
But I see lots of comedians where I think, yeah, people are laughing, but people really should be booing this. I mean, if I wasn't so bloody nice, I would be throwing stuff. But then I'm looking around and people, like, he's making jokes about, like, hey, isn't it funny how we all, like, go to the shops and we queue up and then we pay for stuff and then we leave. And then I'm looking around, everyone's in hysterics. Everyone's like, oh, I remember when I did that on Wednesday. I'm like, I just don't live on this planet of the world. But then maybe some people are laughing to be polite. Some people are genuinely finding it funny. Some people aren't, like, I guess, approaching. They're probably just approaching comedy in like a different way to me. I think I have a kind of an unhealthy thing where when a comedian comes on stage, I'm immediately like, oh, okay, Mr. Big thinks he's funny, let's see.
Arms crossed going, okay, yeah, come at me.
This guy thinks he's funny, does he? Oh, all right then. But then everyone else is probably just like sitting there, you know, laughing at something their mate says, and then they turn to this guy and he's standing up with a mic and he said something equally as funny, so he's not really thinking about it.
Well, I mean, when you're doing comedy, by the nature of what you're doing, you're always going to be playing to a number of different people. So there'll be people like you who are being more critical of what's being said, and there are other people who are, you know, just drinking on a night out and, you know, this is just one of the many things they're doing before they, I don't know, go to the strip club later or go to the pub for... I don't know, go to a hen do or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a good comic should be able to please both audiences. And it's very difficult to do. And I've still no idea how to do it. Yeah. Actually, I need to start writing that song, actually. Big old song about and
I saw the club song you did. That was very good.
Oh, yeah. In the club. Yeah.
Why don't you... We're a bloody hour and a quarter in and you haven't advertised your... Where can people find your stuff?
Oh.
This is supposed to put you on the map, this podcast.
Oh, damn it. Damn it. No. I've ruined my chance.
You're on Instagram. Lead. Tell the folks... How they find you on Instagram.
Actually, so Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, it's at Bennett Cav.
Is there a... How many T's in Bennett?
Two N's, one T.
BennettKav.
That's the one.
And on YouTube, they type in Bennett Kavanagh, presumably.
Yes. I think... Actually, maybe I should change my channel, but the channel is The Fake Bennett Kavanagh.
Ah. Was the real Bennett Kavanagh taken?
No, I just thought it would... it's a joke, which I'm losing confidence in.
Add a joke to the title. See, this comedian always thinking.
Get him laughing before you're even on stage.
Never miss a comedic moment.
That's a Bo Burnham line, isn't it?
Yeah, that's where I got it from. That's because I think of you
never
as
never miss a moment.
You're a Bo Burnham slash. Who else are you kind of slash? Slash? Because like you're musical?
Slash? Yeah, I'll take Slash. They're the metal guys.
Robin Williams.
Ooh, yeah, keep going.
Rodney Dangerfield.
Maybe stop.
Benny King. Is that a comedian? No, Benny Hill.
I don't know Benny King.
Who am I thinking of?
I think, yeah, Benny Hill's a comedy person.
I know so few comedians. I don't know any, like, classical... I don't know who was funny in, like, the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, I guess it would have been Benny Hill. I guess that was like the music hall stuff, so it was like Bruce Forsyth. And
when I was around 10, I went to a Ken Dodd gig.
Oh, yeah.
I'm assuming he was around in the...
Yeah.
He had a puppet and stuff. Have you thought about getting a puppet?
Oh, God. Like, talking of comedians, I've seen so many of those people who've seen Ken Dodd and bring on a puppet and...
Really? People who see Ken Dodd and think, now this is how comedy was supposed to be.
Yeah. Or like those people who know all the Monty Python sketches and think... And, you know, I've emceed for those types of people as well. They're the ones who, like, been really insistent on getting the gig. They get the spot and it's like, hi, Harold, is it? It's like, yeah, I'm sorry, can you introduce me as Dr. Steigenhauser, please? I'm like, okay. Well, I'm going to say... Dr. Steigenhauser, and then he'll come on with a funny hat. And he'll go like, hello, everyone. And there's silence for about 10 minutes, and then he'll go off, and everything's really scripted, but it's just not funny.
Although, again, it was quite funny when you just did it there. You had like a funny look on your face. I don't know if the folks at home will be able to tell that.
Hopefully it was a look of exasperation. And honestly, I'm so tired of those acts.
Definitely contempt.
So tired. Yeah.
Norm Macdonald has a puppet bit that he does.
Wait, does he?
He has a...
Oh my
god.
I've got to see that.
His pal Rusty is one of my favourite... bits that he does. He's a Holocaust denier. I guess that's like an anti... It's like an anti-puppet bit.
That is exactly what I'd expect Norm Macdonald to do.
And also, he only does it on radio shows, so so that he doesn't have to actually do the... He doesn't have to cover his mouth or anything.
I heard... I was watching one of his sets the other day. And he has a really short but really simple joke, where basically it's just saying, ID is a strange abbreviation, isn't it? Because the I is short for I, and the D is short for identification.
That's good one.
He doesn't go any further, but it's just a great little show.
That's a good one. I love how, because that was that he said that in his last Letterman appearance, where he like really put his heart and soul and apparently spent like months writing material and picking out the best stuff. And it's just it's funny to me that he chose that ID joke.
It's good.
It does. It works. It works.
Yeah.
That's why my target joke works, I think. Although I bet if I search it on YouTube, lots of people will have already made this target joke. That's why we need to get out there quickly and say this. I need to make a TikTok about it or something.
Yeah. Oh, that happened with... I think that there was some kind of pizza chain that went down or went under. And then there were loads of gags about... this pizza chain is folded. Does that make it a calzone now?
That's good.
Which is a good joke, but so many people made it at the same time.
It was good the first time the guy did it, probably.
Yeah.
But comedy is nothing if not imitation, right? Ooh. I don't know if that's true. That saying immediately just came to me, and I thought, why not just say it as if it's a thing?
That is a big say it again. Comedy is just...
I can't remember. What did I say?
Comedy is just imitation.
Comedy is, nothing but imitation, I'd say. So, Ben, it's time to say goodbye to the folks. Do you want to say goodbye to... This is like a puppet show now. do you want to say goodbye to the folks at home?
Oh, okay. I'm say goodbye. Cinnamon.
Oh,
stop
Ben.
It, Cinnamon.
Goodbye. Christ. Thank you for listening to the folks at home.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
I'm all alone every night. How I moan and how I fight those big city blues. I walk for miles, place to place, but no one smiles to help me chase those big city blues.